this bubble on Turco, man. I'm glad he
has no, not a. But why? What about him was underwhelming?
Turco, man, had lots of talent. It's just that he didn't actually show it all the time. You know, he would show you flashes of brilliance, and then other races he would kind of be disappointing. You know, you mentioned Terlingua. You could have ridden Terlingua. She was a horse that had so much speed, and I mean, she was built like a quarter horse. I mean, she had the big hips and the strong rear end. And when she was also another smart horse. When she was sitting in that gate, she was waiting on that gate to open. And when she was out of there like a flash. And Wayne Lucas, you know, had her trained to the moment. And almost every one of her careers is, in my opinion, principally a sprinter. But she was by Secretariat. You know, that was a big thing too, and I believe she went on to be a good broodmare, or a great broodmare.
Oh, Stormcat.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you're right. She was a great broodmare. Yeah. And you know, she was, like I said, I don't think that there was any. All I had to do in that one was hang on and not mess it up.
The general point, it just seems like, you know, if you were legged up on a horse with talent, it didn't matter if you're going short, didn't matter turf, long, whatever, you succeeded with any kind of good horse. And I made the comment earlier when I told people you were going to visit, you did have some bad luck in terms of, you know, getting tied on with horses, Daryl, in years where, you know, they were good, but they just kept running into, you know, monsters. And Run Dusty Run probably is the best example of that.
As I mentioned earlier about Master Derby, Run Dusty Run was just, he was one of the opposite as far as his concentration. He's one that had considerable talent. But he was a bit of a, what they use in the term of a European term on a horse that loses his concentration and doesn't see it out to the wire. It's a bit of a monkey. Well, Run Dusty Run was one of those. He would run up to horses and look like he was going to inhale them. But then as he's going to pass them and you get to the lead, all of a sudden he would go off the bit and then start, you know, weaving, you know, left and right. And you just couldn't keep him on the bit and finish out the race. He would have won a lot more races had he just focused and gotten to the wire. One of the things in my career which is not very pretty, and that was the Traverse, and I rode him there. And at that point, I had gotten so frustrated with this horse that it didn't matter. I was going to get this horse the winner's circle going into the Traverse, and I made up my mind that I was going to. You know, was going to get there. I mean, I was going to keep him busy. I was going to. Well, unfortunately, he was a type of horse, too, that you could get him running if you made some contact with a horse. And not hard contact, but the brushes or just touching horse. And he would shoot off with you. He would take off a little bit with him. Well, unfortunately, we did get him home in the Preakness, but those stewards, they took him down. And rightfully so. Yeah, I did go over the line, and you know, that's one of the things. But I had made up my mind before the Traverse, I was going to get this horse's nose in front at the wire. But anyway, that didn't the way to work. But had this horse been a horse that concentrated and really sought out to the wire, he would have won several more races than he did.
He's another golden chance horse. The interesting thing, the association with Dust Commander, the sire of him and Master Derby, I wanted to, you know, make sure to, we're going to listen to the Preakness win. I wanted to bring up a horse, Mackenzie Bridge, who should probably come up more often in discussions of good horses.
Before we get to Mackenzie Bridge, there's another part of the Golden Chance Farm that was instrumental in my career. You know, they also put me on horses in the First Breeders' Cup. Philly finished second. Other one was the Breeders of John Henry was Golden Chance Farm. I mean, you think right. of that. Here's a farm that bred a horse that I ended up on, John Henry, Master Derby, Run Dusty Run, and the Phillies, and a lot of gold. I mean, there was another one, a lot of gold. There's an Eclipse Award picture that's really a famous picture in racing where a horse is reaching over and biting a horse in I think the Trenton Stakes at Belmont.
Yep, and absolutely. The Savage. Award.
Well, that is a Golden Chance Farm on a horse on the inside that was actually being bit. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting that a farm, Golden Chance Farm, was so instrumental in my career. And it was just, but that's the way fate was, and that's the way it had it. Now, you mentioned Mackenzie Bridge. Mackenzie Bridge was a horse that should have won the Belmont. My instructions that day were, the field of horses weren't very, they weren't mile and a half horses, let's put it that way. And the instructions on them were Belmont. So the instructions were, I don't care what you do, make sure this horse goes on the outside. Make sure he gets on the outside. Well, there's an opportunity at the head of the stretch to where there was enough room on the inside or at least in my path to drive a truck through. I followed instructions, and I took him to the outside. And I know we lost, a length or two on the out, taking that path.
And I losing ground.
He just got beat a neck.
Yep.
And you have to hand it to Cordero in that race. I know this show is about me, but Cordero getting that horse, that speed horse, to go a mile and a half, it was unbelievable. That was a
Bold Forbes.
Unbelievable ride.
Bold Forbes. And, that. I'm going to have to pull that up, actually, and that Belmont, because that's a race, and I can even bring that up with Andy. That race, I don't think people recognize, how close it was at the finish, because Mackenzie Bridge was coming at Bold Forbes, and so was Great Contractor. And the chart calls the margins necks, but they were diminishing with every stride. I mean, that's one of the closest multi-horse finishes. We've gotten used to a lot of good finishes in the Belmont in the last few years, but not three-horse finishes.
Yes, that was one that I really felt after the race, that one got away from me. I really thought that one should have been my horse, but it wasn't.
I've got to ask you, because there's a funny thing about the horse I'm going to bring up. He's got a very famous Grade One sprint race named after him, ancient title, and yet, some of his best performances came, going a real route of ground. And here's another horse, Daryl, that at the end of his career, at the age of, what was he? He must have been 7 or 8 when he won those races with you.
I believe he was. It was late in the career. One of the races, it's interesting, and this is where your agent comes in. I'll get to ancient title in just a moment, because he's one part of the story. When we were going into the Sanity of the Handicap, and I say we, me and Scott McCollum, we had the opportunity to ride ancient title, a horse named Mr. Redoy, who had won the Struban.
Oh, yeah.
Or Vigors. We had the opportunity to ride three of the top favorites in the race. And they were all at the top. They were all winning races at the time. Ancient title was coming back around. Mr. Redoy was showing his skills. He ended up finishing second in the San Diego Handicap. And Scotty made, we stayed with Bikers. And what a good story that was. But anyway, ancient title, I did have a chance to ride him a few years later. And he was a horse that won, not with me, but in his career, he won going short. and long. And he was a big, grand-looking horse. And it was the Del Mar Handicap. And the San Diego Handicap. And he left there running and never stopped. And you don't see that too often. You'll see horses leave there and leave the gate, and then you'll get them to settle down and stuff. This race, he went from strength to strength, and that was one of the best races that I had seen or I'd felt with that horse. And I rode him a few times, and he was a great horse. Ancient Title.
And actually, he was competitive at least in that one. He ran on the grass, a handful of times, and twice with you, and that was in the Burke at Santa Anita, and then in the Oak Tree, which finished his season in 77. And boy, you got beat really a neck, Crystal Water and Vigors, in a good finish.
Yes, like I say, he was a horse that, as they get better, and sometimes with age, they get to where they'll run on either surface. I do believe that, and I would need to refresh my memory, but it did appear to me the Ancient Title was better on the dirt. He was better, in my opinion, it seemed that way. But that was just when I was affiliated with him, and he was a good memory in my career.
There's an element that I'd love you to touch on, which is the interesting names when it comes to horsemen that you rode successfully for, and Keith Stuckey in this particular case with Ancient Title, and Smiley Adams. It's not somebody that people should know more about.
And Smiley was a good horseman, and as it showed, he was with the Golden Chance Farm the whole time, and he actually said to me after the Derby with Master Derby, I said to him, I said he ran good, and Master Derby had a great trip in the Derby, but he just didn't get the distance. That's what it appeared to me. So they're going back to the Preakness. So I said, as he's talking on the phone, he says, we're going to run him into Preakness. I said, he had a perfect trip in the Derby. He said, yeah, I know that. He said, but I lost some time with this horse. This horse will do better in the Preakness. And he was right. He was right. And it's showed that way with a lot of horses that he had. He knew what he was doing with the horse. He knew where they were as far as their fitness level, things like that. And he recognized things that good horsemen should recognize. And Smiley was a very good horseman.
Got to bring up, I'd be remiss terribly if I didn't talk about, the team that you were involved with when it came to Dan Lasseter and David Vance, that you guys piled up wins and wherever you went. And I told you last night, I got about as good a source on some of this as anybody could have. And that's John Parada, who says you were, at the head of a fun group with Goose, Dennis Gooseheimer, and Tricky Dick Fisher.
Yes, it was kind of interesting how that came about. I was riding in Maryland for the second string for Lasseter, and they had bought some horses out of Maryland, and one of those horses that had won in Maryland with me was going for a race in at Libertyville, and there was my agent at the time kind of heard that they were going to go with the first string rider for the race, and he fought for me. He said, no, Daryl should ride. Well, he won the day. Daryl, I did go there to ride the race. Well, that day, the rider that's the A-string rider, I guess the main stable for Lasseter, he didn't show up to ride. So I picked up his horses. I picked up his mounts. I think I won five races that day.
Wow. And that's
when you're at the right place at the right time. And as we're walking back, David Vance, who was very instrumental in my career, I remember sitting outside the jock's room, and David always had a chew of tobacco in his mouth, and he says, Jock, he says, would you like to go to Hot Springs with us to ride? And ride first string for Lasseter. I couldn't get yes out fast enough. And it was remarkable that sometimes it's just fate has it to where it's going to go your way. And riding for the, and this is another time too to where stables didn't do this. They flew those horses in from Pennsylvania and in the East Coast there that were fit, and horses that were at Oaklawn Park. You know, they're having to train in that inclement weather during frozen time, so they're not able to have a steady schedule of training and stuff. So they dropped, you know, they flew them in there, which was not done, and they had fit horses. So they had the best of it. And when you're, and they would also, David would also put them in the right place. And as you said, Goose and Tricky Dick, that was their job, find the right races for those horses. And that was a fun time. That was a fun time.
That's that John said. He said, over down to Atlantic City. And John said he saw, he said he had to take David and Lassiter and Goose out after a win. They went to the Library Steakhouse.
Yeah.
And John said they're picking out, you know, 38-ounce steaks. he said those guys, he said it was a, he said it was a party nonstop. The Library, Sonia's, I heard about Sonia's, and a lot of fun places.
Yes, it was. Yeah, they liked to live life, and at that time everybody was full of themselves, and we got to do it in a remarkable fashion.
Well, I'm not even going to talk about being up in the stand, because obviously the horses and the rides, you know, you came on the racetrack inadvertently, somebody threw you on a quarter horse, and the next thing you knew, decades went past and you're a Hall of Famer.
That's unbelievable. It's a story that you couldn't ride it. I mean, there's no way that you would have figure out the end of it or fate smiled on me. I've been lucky to be born under a lucky star, and I've had a great career, and it continues. I'm still in the game. It's not as much fun as riding good horses, but I'm still in the game to an area where I am enjoying it, and I am fortunate.
We're going to listen to the 1975 Preakness. I still got plenty more, Darrell. I've left the European trips and some other stuff and other horses for maybe induction weekend or, another occasion. But I can't thank you enough for this. And I know so many people are delighted for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Each one that has wished me congratulations in the last few days and stuff. It's been phenomenal, and this is another one of those that when it happens to you, as you go through the days, you realize it's important, but you realize it takes on a significant importance in your life, and it's unbelievable.
Darrell McCark, and let's listen to his ride and the call of the 1975 Preakness. Andy Serling joins us next.
Early lead. Native Guest is up on the outside alongside his Media. Then further out it's Sing, and there's the pace. Coming by us for the first time, Native Guest has the rail and the lead by a head. Media is second on the outside by a link. Sing in third by a link. Then down on the rail it's Master Derby. Diablo, Avatar is hung out a bit as they go into the turn, and he's followed by Foolish Pleasure, then Just the Time, Bold Chapeau, and finally Prince Thou Art. They're on the turn. Native Guest leads it by a half a length. Media still second on the outside. Then there's a length back to Master Derby, and up on the outside is Sing. They're right together. A gap of two lengths back, Diablo and Avatar together. Another two and a half, and Foolish Pleasure. Bold Chapeau moves up a bit now. Then further back, Prince Thou Art, and the final horse is Just the Time. They're still pretty well bunched as they go down the back stretch with Native Guest holding on to the lead a half length. Now Master Derby looks for room, and on the outside, Sing comes up. Avatar has made a sudden move, and now we have four of them battling for the lead as they move into the final turn. Native Guest on the inside by a head. Master Derby is second by a head. Avatar is third a length. Sing drops to the outside, and it looks like Foolish Pleasure is now making a run. He's into fourth. They're on the turn. Still Native Guest, Master Derby, and Avatar battling the lead with Master Derby ahead in front. Avatar second on the outside. Native Guest third the rail. Foolish Pleasure is now fourth, and he's still trying to make up that ground. They're swinging for the stretch. Master Derby has the lead as they drive into the stretch. And Master Derby is opening it up now. He has three lengths as they make the stretch run. Avatar is second ahead with Foolish Pleasure third on the outside. And Diablo is also driving up on the outside. They're trying to catch Master Derby. He's still two and a half. Foolish Pleasure is gaining. He switches to the inside. Master Derby holding on and Foolish Pleasure trying to catch him. This is close. Master Derby holding on and he wins it.
In the stretch.
There it is. And that's one of those, you know, there's a few of those Triple Crown races that have got, you know, that music in the background, which takes away. But unbelievable. That was the 100th Preakness. And we thank Daryl McCart for joining us. So much fun. And one of the crazy things I can't explain, Master Derby went off at 23-1. 23-1 that day. And he was, you know, it's not like he was buried in the Derby. What was he, fourth in the Derby? And for whatever reason, he was completely ignored. 6-5 on Foolish Pleasure. And Avatar was 9-2. Singh was 5-1. And for whatever reason, he just got lost on the board. And so those that came back to Master Derby, who had to be supplemented, I should note, to the Preakness. In fact, I should go back and try to figure out why that's interesting. He's got the S, the supplement, by his name. But the terrific ride by McCark, who kind of gutted him and wins the 100th running of the Preakness. Thanks to Daryl for a terrific visit. Andy Serling standing by from the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Really good. We just had a really fun half hour with Daryl McCark, who I'd never had on and who really had, you know, in a brief career, had an association with, I mean, a lot of Hall of Famers and champions, including John Henry, probably.
Where do you think in his illustrious career he places his first appearance on the Steve Big Show? Do you think it hit the top 10?
I'm going to say no. He did say that I could have ridden Terlingua.
Terlingua was the dam of who?
Stormcat.
Oh, I'm impressed. You actually knew that.
She must have run more than you think, because
she came to New York. I think she ran either as a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, and I want to say something happened, right? That seemed possible.
Got hurt, you mean, in New York?
I don't know. I'm not sure. If I can get my computer to work, I'll look it up. I feel like I remember coming. I don't know if it was one of those races like the Cumley or something like that. I could be wrong, but I feel like I remember her either coming and trouncing or something happening. Anyway.
She ran 17 times.
Did she? Okay, I was wrong. I must be thinking of somebody else. Lando Lucy.
Yeah. Well, she, and I'm just looking, among her, you know, she really, it's funny, Stormcat is her big association, but she won the Del Mar Debutante and the Hollywood Juvenile and the Hollywood Lassie. She won the Nursery as well, which wasn't a graded stake, but she won 3 grade twos as a 2-year-old. She was second in the Alcibiades. She was third in the Frisette. And then as a 3-year-old, she won the Santa Ynez, the Las Flores, and the La Brea as a 4-year-old. I mean, she was a nice, complete horse.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's fun. I was amazed, actually. There's horses that I didn't realize he was associated with. He rode Ancient Title at the end of his career for five
Hawley
races. General.
Didn't Sandy Hawley ride Ancient Title?
Sandy, a lot of people actually had turns on him, and for periods of time. as it happens. Sandy Hawley for a big bunch, Lafitte Pinkai, Fernando Toro as a young horse, as a three-year-old. You know, the one thing I didn't get in with, when I feel bad now, I didn't get a chance to ask Daryl. I told him I'm going to have to get him back because Hot and Nasty, who came as close to Ruffian as any filly she ran against.
Yeah, she ran second to her in the sorority at Monmouth. She got beat about 2.5 lengths.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what happened to her after that. Was that a last year man's horse? We were talking about that. You and I were talking about that yesterday. Hot and Nasty. I want to say that she was that farm.
Yeah, with Gordon Potter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
We had a lot of fun. That was tremendous. You could tell when Run Dusty Run came up, he said, it's my fault. It was my fault in the Travers. He said,
he got taken down.
He said,
right?
I was going
to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was third?
Yeah.
For $1 million, who was third? Give you a hint, he was second to Forgo in the Woodward is next start. That'll really help you. That'll be a trivia question. People can tweet to you and let you know the answer. He's trained by Oscar Dishman. How's that? A trainer I'm sure you're very familiar with. Silver Series.
Silver Series? Wow.
That is pretty good horse.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that was sort of the theme. I mean, he rode some horses that, as you and I talk about, and you're responsible for this moniker. You know, horses, if they ran today, they'd be stars, and they were just good horses or nice horses in their era. And he rode a lot of those, like Jacqueline Klugman and Run Dusty Run. I brought up Mackenzie Bridge with him.
Well, Mackenzie who he Bridge says, was a good horse.
Well, Angel just was so masterful in that Belmont, but he feels he should have won that Belmont on Mackenzie Bridge.
Great 76. Contract almost won it.
The three of them at the wire. And I said to him, it's funny, Andy, that you came up with Great Contractor. That Belmont, has there been a three-horse photo since then?
Well, I mean, wasn't Touch Gold and Seat and Silver, wasn't that one a pretty close one? Silver Series, by the way, was 11 for 29, won almost 600,000, which was not easy back then. I want to say it was like a horse from Exarban, like he ran at Exarban and stuff. Silver Series ran three times in the fall of 78 at Keeneland. Great Contractor, actually, I want to say, and I'll look it up, but I want to say that Great Contractor had an unusual circumstance heading into that Belmont. He had actually run a mile and a half previous to that. He, Silver Series ended up with Peter Howe. He was definitely Oscar Dishman when he was a three-year-old. He had run in like the Bogan V, one of those races down at Hialeah, a mile and a half of the turf against Holders in like April or something. Yeah, he was sort of an interesting horse. Is it possible that he was in like 76? Could he have been in like he might have been the fifth horse in that Jockey Club with Slough and Exceller.
Hmm.
Silver Series won the Hutchinson. Won the Hawthorne Derby. Won the Ohio Derby. Won the American Derby. Sports and the Monmouth Invitational, which became the Haskell. Who's second in the Woodward?
This is my theory.
Silver Series ran some big races.
It's amazing, Andy, it's amazing how many horses like this that the public has either never heard of or has forgotten about. State Dinner is another one that fits in that
State Dinner
in that category.
Never heard of him. Stevie Whitney's horse, Elliot Birch, won the handicap triple. I saw them. I was there.
I'm telling you.
I think I saw him with he. I want to say that was 79, right? And I want to say that the which was the Suburban was a mile and a quarter one, the mile and a half one. No, he. That was the next year, right? Because he lost the Liberal Member, but that might have been 80. Was that 79 or 80?
Yes.
Liberal Member had six horses, and Ramon Encinas rode him. It was never too early for Ramon to go to the whip. I remember he won a mile and a half prep for it. It was a huge favorite. They had a prep, and he went to the whip the 6 furlong marker. He did not last. I don't think he was around that long. Ramon Encinas, but he rode, but he was like Angel Panna liked him. I don't know what the story with him was, but he was around for a while, for not long. State Dinner is a very good horse. I think one of the reasons people don't remember these horses, if they don't become proficient sires, people don't remember them. They don't have a last.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I've noticed in these polls that horses that had good careers as sires sort of get remembered much more. Like, you know, that poll I'm running now where the runaway winner is, Unbridled. Well, he's not really the best in that group. The group is spend a buck.
Triple Crown race.
Triple. Who's the other one?
Right.
Who's the other one? The other horse is a good horse.
I looked at it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the right horse in that poll is probably spend a buck, right? But
I voted for Unbridled.
Unbridled's running away, and I personally, I don't think he's the right. I wouldn't have made him a choice, but it's close. But I know you're excited because you had on trainer last week, so you're a little biased there, aren't you?
Well, I had both their trainers. So I don't. You know, it's funny you bring up Spend a Buck too, because Cam's back with a string. He's sending horses out again.
Really?
Yeah, down at Gulfstream.
Yeah,
ran the other
I'm
day.
Not surprised.
Speaking of which, you know, we're gonna end up in timing trouble here, Andy, because I gotta get one more in. You and I had a discussion after the Gulfstream Pick Six, and in fact, Cam's horse was instrumental. He was a part of the first leg, and I thought that I really wanted you to, you know, kind of flesh out your thoughts, because I really am going to question my approach to those going forward. Because I had an $80 ticket, and I felt like, you know what, I've got to get two or three people to come in, and it's not enough. It's just not enough to attack a sequence, because there's such a chance, a propensity for something to, you know, to mysterious to happen in a sequence like that, especially down there.
A tricky sequence, unless you somehow found a way to get the last winner. It wasn't hard to be alive. I mean, you know, they asked me to make a ticket for Naira Betts, and you know, those tickets, you can't make them that big. And obviously for $76.80, you really don't have any chance to hit it of any, you know, any significant amount. I think most players know that. That was actually a good sequence. And I can't criticize them because it was a good card. It was. I do think that they need to find a way, and they've never done this at Gulfstream, and I'm not trying to be overly critical of them, but I really believe they need to find a way to make the sequence more manageable for small players. Those carryovers are built very much on the backs of smaller players. You know, I don't like the bet. I don't understand why people bet it. I think they're foolish to bet it. But they are. And I think that Gulfstream's loading these cards up, and this was a good card, but loading them up with one 12-horse field after another in big fields, it really is just setting it up so that they're just, you know, they're just sitting ducks for the big, huge syndicates and the CAW players. So if they could find a way to have a smaller field where there's a shorter price, you know, and you can't guarantee a shorter price, but smaller field that's manageable in at least one race and a couple of mid to smaller in two of the three. And I know they're trying to maximize handle, and I get all of that, but they're going to get the big handle for the thing anyway. And if they could find a way, the smaller guy has a chance, because frankly, the smaller guy never has a chance in their sequences. Never, never. You know, there are other things going on than just always squeezing every last dollar of handle. But regardless, that's a bigger discussion. But that sequence where I didn't come close, I think I had two on top. But, you know, if I had bet about $600 sort of expanding it, I would have been alive to as many as eight horses in the last race. I would have lost because I didn't like the last winner. So I'm not going to redboard that win. But, you know, the first race, I discussed it with Nick Tamara before I put the ticket up, and I was deciding whether I would include the horse that ultimately won, the Wesley Ward horse, as a third, or if I would add the 11 who finished second in the 10th race, or 11th race, not 11th race, I think. I don't know what the hell it was. The 11 horse that ran a second. Which race I should use three, and I ultimately decided that one. You know, and it's these decisions. One affects the other, right? So, because if I'm going to use three in the first leg, it multiplies by 50%. The second one would pay $25, very usable. The unfortunate thing was the scratch of the eight in there. It seemed like a viable alternative type horse. And because the favorite was dicey there, three or four to five or not. And, you know, I used two. If you double the four, you certainly have the winner. The next race, I used four or five. I didn't like Halliday. I understood he could be the speed because, you know, Dylan Davis figured to rate the horse who was clearly the actual speed of the race, El Tormento, and they were taking blinkers off. But Halliday's not that good. I think he's won his last career race because I don't see how he's ever going to get, you know, handed two easier wins than he has in the last two starts. But I used four. He would have been my fifth, clearly. And, you know, I probably should have used him on four, but I had a position against him, and I don't regret it. The next two winners were on my tickets with small plays. The last winner was hard, but, you know, you have to look. And it's, you know, you can say to yourself, well, I would have added Holiday. Well, I could add the first winner, you know. Well, who am I adding in other races as well? And I think if you're saying you're going that far, you're using a lot of horses in the last race. So, yeah, it was probably a hittable thing for the maybe about a $2,000 play, but that was not a hittable sequence for a small amount of money. For anybody. I'm sorry, it just wasn't.
No, I agree. Yes, and
the three should have won the first leg.
You bring
no
up,
question about it, but he didn't.
Yes, he didn't. He got beat in nose. And you bring up a great point. That reserve not attained, who I really wanted to lean on in the second leg. I forgot about that he scratched. And that sort of changed the dynamic in there. I forgot about that.
He was a very good, logical second dive. He may have stunk, and he's probably got issues because he was, I don't know if he's a vet scratch or not, but I'm guessing he was, you know, second off a 2-year layoff. But he was kind of the interesting alternative. The winner wasn't impossible, but you probably had to use four to get there.
I agree.
You can't just say, oh, it was my other use. That's always the easiest thing to say. Listen, it was a good sequence of races. It really was. It was good racing. I mean, I give him credit for that. It really was. It just was a very, very difficult sequence. And I just wish there could be, every time I look at the sequences, I just roll my eyes and think, yeah, I couldn't hit this thing for a fortune. And this thinking that, oh, it's 20 cents, that gives all these smaller players a chance. Oh, give me a break. You know what I mean? You can't hit these things for $100.
Yeah,
you can't for too long.
I hear you.
I understand the argument. We as racetracks are trying to maximize our handle. I totally get all that. But Gulfstream has made such a big thing about their Rainbow Six that it would be nice if there was a sequence that was a little more manageable for smaller players. That's all I'm going to say. You know, it's not. Oh, it doesn't.
Well, and actually, by all rights, even this happened to be, you know, as those sequences go, I mean, compared to the winter months, you know, 9 by 8 by 9 by 12 by 9 by 11. I mean, at least there was a couple of 8 and 9 head races that,
this
you know.
This was a very, very, very tough sequence.
I totally agree.
The single biggest favorite in this sequence was that suspicious, untrustworthy drop down in the second leg that lost.
Yes.
Not exactly
Louis Kingdom.
The kind of horse you want to lean on. You know?
Yep. 4 to 5.
You know,
I guess Rad took some abuse,
maybe I'm going to single Battle of Blenheim, but, you know, you and I both, you know, we fell into that incredible sucker trap, you know, that regrettable shooting the breeze or shooting the breeze. You know, every jerk liked that horse, including us. You know, I mean, I include myself in that category. But once I saw that every single person liked that horse, I knew that horse wasn't going to win. Everybody liked that.
Well, Rad,
everyone, 5 to 2.
Yeah, great.
You know, and I'm going to say that another problem, especially for a lot, you know, you've got novices looking. The bad morning line there is incredibly problematic for people that aren't incredibly sophisticated, because they're going to see horses.
I agree.
10 to 1, 8 to 1, you know, that aren't going to be half of that price or a third of that price. So that's not helping either. It's tough, but it's tough anyway. You still got to pick the winners regardless of that. It is an interesting exercise, but it's very hard to hit. Good card, though.
That's a fair point, and I'm not trying to beat up on
I like the person who makes the line, but, you know.
Yes.
It makes it unduly hard sometimes by badly missing. You know, in making horses, you know, are going to be odds on 2 to 1. Your whole line gets sort of thrown. By the way, Great Contractor ran the Pan Am, the Hollywood Hialeah Turf Cup, and the Bougainvillea as a 3-year-old. Mixed in there was a second in the Florida Derby, by the way. Who won the Florida Derby that year? Derby? 76. Was Fluid this year.
Seven, 76.
I just gave the answer. Who was the favorite in the Derby? The Bold Forbes beat. Two huge races, one in the Flamingo, one in the Florida Derby. Honest pleasure.
Yep. Good job.
All right, you got some other person?
They both got beat. They both.
Another jockey?
Yeah, they both got beat. No. They both got beat. They both got beat by Elocutionist in the Preakness.
Well, sure, because Honest Pleasure went after Bold Forbes.
Right. They feel like they're only two horses in the race. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, after Bold Forbes had upset him in the Derby, they weren't going to let him get away with it. Jolly went after him. I think Bold Forbes ran third, and Honest Pleasure may have run last. It's kind of like a 49-win colors type thing, right? And Bold Forbes.
Well, the race I think of is
you probably looked it up, so you know. Who was second and who trained him in the Preakness?
Who?
Did you look it up? I want to say it was Play the Red for Johnny Campo.
You're right, at 26 to 1.
Yes, 26 to 1. I could have told you that, too. Elocutionist was a good horse. Who trained him? Eddie Yowell, right? Eddie Yowell trained him?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. I remember that race.
You're amazing. You're amazing.
My memory gets worse with every year. You know, it's very good. It's the 70s. I was young then. I have to pay that memory. Every year after that, it gets worse and worse and worse. I'm an obsessive guy. Right, you got
what? You told us. You had those... You had those chart books, and you know, you were these were like baseball cards to you.
I love racing.
Was there any other sport at the time? Was there any other sport that you were
no interest whatsoever? When I discovered that you could bet on sports in sort of, I went to a Knick game, Christmas Knick game in 77, so the end of 77 when they played the Sixers, and the Sixers had, you know, Dr. J and all those great players. And I sat behind the basket with my uncle. He took me to the game. And that's when I started really watching basketball. And then I found out you could bet basketball. And since I was spending most of my time hanging out in the bookie joint in Saratoga, I could bet basketball. So that naturally started working, you know. So that's how I became a basketball fan. And the Knicks and Nets were on Channel 9, their away games. So I watched the Knicks and Nets all the time. And being that I had an obsessive personality, that sort of, you know, but that's when I got involved. But that's, you know, I started watching baseball a little later and football, you know, when I could bet football when I was in college. But once I went to the track after school, you know, going on Sundays, I lost all interest in football. Baseball, I like baseball, good numbers game, but basketball. But when I was younger, no, just sports.
Andy, I appreciate it. And
as do
we'll
I.
Catch up I'm next week. Good. Yep.
Right. We'll, oh, yeah, we're on catch TV up next on week, Saturday and right? Sunday. We're doing Churchill.
Oh, good. Absolutely.
All day. Whole card Saturday and Sunday. In fact, they draw off Churchill opening day card today, so looking forward to that. So the crew will be together. I'll be home. Maggie will be home. I want to say Jonathan's on as well.
Oh, good.
I'm not in charge of who they have on the show, so I don't want to, you know, I'm not sure. But guys will be in the studio, I believe, out in California as well. So I'm done.
Andy, thank you. We will catch up next week, and just waiting to see if Kay is connected.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I still got a couple of minutes here to
see you later.
To handle. All right. Talk next week. Andy Serling, everybody, and watch for the TV this weekend again. America's Day at the Races. I'll tell you who had a day at the races on Saturday that was just remarkable, and it's Clocker John. He joins us getting ready to go back to work as horses roll onto the backstretch at the Downs. John, congratulations.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
It's funny. I mean, everybody has big days, but, you know, you think of it as, you know, ideally they have big days. But when it comes to the contest side of things, you know, to participate in three different ones, I mean, talk about even the approach, because, you know, it's a lot to do. It's a lot to keep track of. How much overlap was there?
I'm lucky. I mean, they're the same tracks. And, I mean, it's all the same races. And two of the three were pick and praise, so I put those in and totally forgot about them and watch them as the day goes on. And could have won the BCBC one if it wasn't picking, if it wasn't live. It was only a pick and brave. So I changed off a favorite at Tampa to a longer price horse, and of course the favorite won. And he only paid 280 and 220, but that I needed 220 to beat us, Satina. So,
well, I will say, if you're going to get beat in one of the three and lose by, you know, a couple of dollars and cents, Roger Satina, you know, we root for Roger too. So I when I saw Roger atop the leaderboard, I said, oh, all right. But still, you win your second NHC seat already. So that you put it away here in the first half of the year. That's unbelievable. And the other one was what, a $25,000 pot?
Yeah, I end up getting 14,000 and change for that, which that helps a lot there. And I usually play all the weekly games at horse tourneys for either TAMS or Gulfstream, just getting some weekend feeders that way.
You know, part of this, and given it, and you showed the leaderboards on Twitter and at Facebook, and so you can see, you know, who John played. And at the end, John, of the sequence, just talked to Andy about, you know, the Gulfstream, you know, force out. Did you play a force out ticket too?
Yes, I did.
How'd you make out there? Because you had the tough winner at the end.
I ended up hitting it, but needed Wesley to win the first leg. Or not Wesley, but the horse that Dylan Davis on to win the first leg. And, I mean, I hit it on a spread ticket, but on, like, a little backup ticket, which I played with, like, $30. I played it for four times. I would have had it five times total.
You got
me.
I singled
Wesley and went too deep with the, I think, a single by three, by two, by four, by five. And just missed it just like that.
Oh, my God. So you had it once. You had one 120 center?
Yeah, 120 center.
So 30,000 there, 14,000 from the cash game. So it was basically a $50,000 day. And for those that are
the only ticket of cash on the day, though, that's what's the bad thing about it.
Oh, that's it. That I was going to say. Wait a minute. You didn't hold it. You didn't bet the 27-1 shot in the Gulfstream nightcap.
No, I was alive for everything. So I was alive for the pick six.
So you didn't care.
Alive for the contest. Yeah. And I just didn't care. I was down on the day a little bit already. So,
what did you like about that horse? How many did you use in that last leg?
I just went 5 deep. I used 2, 3, 4, 6, 9. I handicapped the race, and I thought the 3 was the horse to beat, but it's definitely not a contest horse. I thought he'd be 9-5. And I threw the 4, and he'd run okay his last few starts, and that Bug Boy Trejo had been riding well, so I thought threw him in there with that.
Unbelievable. And how big, the main ticket that you put, how much, out of curiosity? How big was
that? It was $1,200. My buddy Tony in New York was in on it with me, too. He had texted me that morning and said he wanted in. We hit one earlier in the year together, and he always wants in. You know, Tony Hussan, Paul's buddy, and texted me that morning and said he wanted in. And so let me know when you map the ticket out, and he'll send me some money via PayPal. And he calls me up after the race cheering because he's been stuck in the house up there in Saratoga and doing yard work, just trying to stay busy.
Oh, and that's great. So you share a $31,000 pop, and how about that second winner, that Assertico, who was 12-1, and to me, I got hurt because Reserve Not Attained, I was going to lean on in that second leg, and so when he came out, that kind of threw me off a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the favorite was kind of suspicious in that race, and going 4 deep in there. Assertico was like my third choice, I believe.
Interesting. Yeah, Cat Gone Quick, their War Act, Louis Kingdom, Assertico. I guess some people liked Harper Go Lucky, who, you know, was kind of a non-threatening third in there.
I used 3, 4, 5, 7. I'd use 3, 4, 5, 7 in there.
3, 4, 5, 7. Yeah, Cat Gone Quick, War Act. The exacta. What about the stake with Halliday and you know, how'd you approach that one?
I used 3, 6, 9, 11 on the spread ticket, and just 6, 9 on the ones where I'd singled the fast the horse in the front left for a fast scene in the first leg.
And then Battle of Blenheim, who ended up, I tell you, I thought Ortiz looked like a winner all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, I had the 8 in that race, too, so, I mean, if he would have hung on, it would probably take my pick.
Wow.
I think if you beat either one of the favorites, or Holiday or him, I figured the ticket goes to 100,000.
You know, it's funny that you say this, because Gray's Fable, you know, he got away with, you know, a pretty mundane, a pretty even, you know, 24, 48, and 3, 112. And when I look back, the race was fast. I mean, 134 and 3. When I looked back, I thought, you know what? That horse was absolutely usable and dangerous, that there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, speed options in there. And so that was clever. Oh, my God, the thing that would have definitely exploded it. Well, congratulations on hitting the pick six and then the two contests. Unbelievable. You got to be getting excited. I talked to Darren earlier, and boy, it seemed like people, John, were so relieved yesterday to see those vans come rolling in.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I mean, a lot of trainers have been held up in New Orleans and not be able to run, and the ones around here haven't been able to run. And a lot of people are just glad to get back and try to get back in a groove. And it's going to be a tough meet with all the ship-ins and everything, but just try to get a little normalcy back in their lives.
Who, out of curiosity, who you give an advantage to? The horses that, you know, they're going to come over from Keeneland that have been in, you know, been around, or, you know, the ones that are going to be very fresh, or the ones that are coming that'll show up from Oaklawn that'll probably have had races, you know, fairly close up in the PPs.
It's one of those things I do every year. I usually toss the Oaklawn horses at the beginning of the meet. They've ran hard down there all meet, chasing those purses, running back quicker in some times than they'd really want. And this year it's kind of been weird, though, because I do have the recency. So it's kind of been a case-by-case race, really. I mean, you want to look for fresh horses and everything. It's really tough. It's going to be a day-to-day learning curve with this, all this, all these horses coming off layoffs and everything, and shippers from all around. So it's just being one of those things you learn day-to-day and just watch the first few days and kind of get an idea whose barns are running and whose barns aren't.
Exactly. Well, I'm anxious to see the overnight here later. And Darren brought everybody up to speed. There's going to be a press release shortly, actually, with all some of those details. We'll swing back, John, to the contest arena. Suggestions for people that, you know, there's been some people, I think, that have gotten involved, including Rick Hammerly. Rick's been playing, and he's found the head-to-heads, and he's enjoying that. But, you know, any suggestions for, you know, for other contest players to, you know, try to maximize their opportunity?
Yeah, just find a circuit that you're comfortable with watching the races at. Get an idea of the feel of the players on that circuit and focus on those and play your daily feeders to get in the NHC ones and the weekend contests for money. And, I mean, I'm always playing the day head-to-heads or the contests I like are the five people winner-take-alls and everything. I mean, you could still have a mediocre day and actually win one of those contests. I won one last week for like $35, and I thought I'd had a bad day. I looked at the results, and I'd won it. And, I mean, that pays for all your other stuff during the day, too, all your feeders in case you don't do well in those.
What are you going to do now, actually? If you've got the two NHC seats, do you just stop playing? Obviously, there's not a – unless there's some prizes involved, there's no reason to really be, you know, to keep at it. So what, some BCBCs and cash opportunities?
You still play those a little bit and play the cash opportunities on the weekends. It just matters if I have time to really look at Gulfstream like I really want to or when Belmont starts back up, what I play on those. But I'm thinking about chasing the tour – now that I'm kind of probably going to be in the top 20 after this week. And, I mean, I think everything's going to be online, it looks like, this year so far. And it's easy to put one of those $18 feeders in and play the weekend contest. That's, I mean, you're not going to lose a lot of money going $18 a pop just to try to get in the weekend ones.
You know, I'm curious, this period, John, these basically 8 weeks where we've had the five ovals and, you know, for those that play quarters, Remington and Los Al, have you found it obviously, you know, easy to focus and you know?
Yeah,
and,
usually during the winter, I look at the five main circuits. Like I'll look at New York, then Florida, Oakland, Fairgrounds, and Southern California. But, I mean, this year I was really focusing on Gulfstream and Oakland, it seemed like, were my two tracks. So once everything shut down, I was kind of lucky those were my two main tracks that stayed open.
Absolutely. And obviously it's paid some dividends here in the last couple of weeks. And now you can focus on the day job, or at least the morning job.
Yeah, I'll be back to work tomorrow. I mean, I don't think we're going to have any workers till Friday at the earliest, maybe even Saturday. But just to get back out there and see who all's there and just kind of get back in the groove of getting back up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, it's certainly excited. And Darren just sent me a text that the press release just went out with the races that are going to be involved in this revised road to the Derby, and it feels like today really is the kickoff, John, and as always, appreciate the visit and thrilled for the success. Well done.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks a lot for the congratulations, and talk to you soon.
You got it. Big John, everybody. Clocker John Nichols, and one of the sharpest opinions anywhere, and you know, John's had to really stay home carefully. I mean, for those of you that, you know him and you know, we've talked about him for years, you know, he lost a lung. So, this situation for him, I mean, you want to talk about a pre-existing condition? How about having one lung? Yeah. So John has been dutiful about staying in, and it's only, you know, with things kind of relaxing a little bit, but he will continue to avoid the general public, I think, until this thing is in hand. How about that? $2 and change from winning three contests, a BCBC, an NHC, and a $25,000 cash money game. And he hits the pick six. Amazing. Well done. A fun morning. Chris Katulak from Foner, and I sent out the link to the Times piece. Really nice. I've read it in like three during each break. I was able to read a section. Darren Rogers with the terrific info, and look for that schedule. I'll send the link to that too. Sid with the Jockey Club news, and Charlatan going to Hill and Dale. Daryl McHarg, really fun, talking about his career, Hall of Fame now. Andy Serling and John Nichols. Thanks to Casey behind the glass, as we say, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Good luck in your plan.
At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.